All right. Well, today I'm joined by costume designer Elsa Windsor. Elsa, welcome. How are you doing?
Hello. Very good. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. It's we were just kind of reminiscing. We know each other from many, many moons ago now, but it's nice to kind of reconnect virtually over Zoom after all these years. How have you been kind of faring and holding up during the whole lockdown period?
Yeah, pretty good. Just sort of keeping busy and keeping creative, doing some things for myself and, you know, passing the time with some embroidery and sort of doing things at home and, yeah, trying to keep busy, really. But otherwise, pretty good.
Is that, I guess, a big part of the costume designer life in the sense that, you know, you're always trying different things out at home and looking at different patterns and trying to do different sort of things or, yeah?
Yeah, I just can't. I mean, my other half, who's a boom op, he just says, will you do something different? Like, do some, you know, a puzzle or Lego. Or I'm just like, no, I'll, you know, I'm going to play around with some fabric or I'll do some embroidery or, you know, make a shirt. Or it's just, I just don't think of doing anything else fun. Otherwise, like, it's just my.
Well, that's your version of Lego. It's
exactly. I make a shirt. It's like a patterned piece of Lego. Exactly.
I guess it's just when you know, make sure you don't use his boom pole as a mannequin. Don't cross those lines because that could be problematic.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, I've used these wires to like embroider a basket. Like, yeah, no. Best not.
Excellent. Well, I wanted to bring you on because costume design, obviously, they know about it. Obviously, we see all the costumes in film and on TV shows, and we can appreciate the intricate ones for sure, maybe more than some of the more sort of subtle and nuanced ones. But to me, as an outsider, it doesn't seem like the most obvious thing to get into. I know you can do, you know, costume design related courses at university, but like with most things in the arts, there's no apparent real path. So I guess it'd be good to talk a little bit about sort of your start in the world, kind of your origin and also maybe what inspired you in the first place to get into costume design. Like, was it a fascination from a young age or?
I love that. My origin. I feel like it's like my Marvel origin movie.
That's what it is. That's your superhero story. That's why I say it. There you go.
It's funny because so often my friends who are kind of not in the business will say like, I didn't notice the costumes. And I'm like, that's because it's good costume. Like, almost in a way, like you say, the period dramas and the really big sort of Elizabethan dresses and, you know, that sort of thing will often be noted for on the costumes because it's obviously more of a statement piece. And it's often a discussion in sort of the costume world about, you know, awards and things is that the sort of contemporary costumes do often fly under the radar, whereas the more sort of outlandish period dramas tend to get the nods for, you know, the awards and things. But it is funny when it's bad costume, it's more sort of more noticeable. People will go, God, what, like, you know, it draws you away from the film, which is the complete opposite of what we're trying to do, you know. So I've always loved textiles and fabrics and fashion and loved going to sort of, you know, exhibitions and things with my mum. My mum would take me to the V&A and, you know, it just blew my mind, the fashion, you know, store at the V&A, which is amazing. And, you know, I loved doing it at school, sort of at GCSE and A-level. I did art and would always do it sort of down the fabric and textile route. And my teacher, I remember saying, oh, you know, are you going to do fashion? I remember thinking that was a sort of a strange, oh, do I want to be a fashion designer? I don't, you know. And I looked into sort of, you know, further education courses of fashion design, and they often had a big sort of marketing aspect or, you know, based on trends and the sort of business side of it. I just remember thinking that's not, you know, I don't want to set trends. I want to sort of, you know, reflect on sort of the history of fashion and that side of it. And I remember it's sort of my moment, which sounds really cheesy now, but my favorite film was the Moulin Rouge, Baz Luhrmann's the Moulin Rouge. And I'd watch it sort of on repeat when I was doing my A-level, you know, textile work and stuff. And I remember just having this like light bulb moment of, I wonder if you can do that. Like, who does that? Yeah. You know, which sort of sounds so cheesy now. But I remember then I looked up sort of, you know, Moulin Rouge costume, and it came up with sort of fancy dress, you know, if you're having a party or something. And then, you know, it led me to find out about Catherine Martin and about the costumes. And I just thought, wow, like, you can do that as a job. And then that led me down to sort of finding a costume course. which I looked at several sort of over the UK. And a lot of them were, well, not a lot, some of them were very much based on making and the sort of construction of period garments and working with toiles and calico. And I just thought, no, I want to sort of design and experiment with fabrics and do what I'd been doing before with embroidery and printing and textiles and that sort of thing. And that led me to, you know, costume with textiles, which was a degree at the Huddersfield University. And I went there and just loved it. And the course leaders were just so excited about what I'd been playing around with at A-level. And then I got onto the course and just loved it from then on.
What would you say then? Because obviously people think of costume, they think of obviously just the end fabrics, right? But I think, you know, we're going much deeper because your job isn't just creating it and putting it together in a physical sense. There's, I'm assuming, a huge step before where you get a script or an idea and you're having to almost conceptualize in your head first what palettes and what textures tell the story. Like, you're always aiding the story, I guess, is my point. How do you, I mean, does that process vary, or do you have a certain process that you undertake when you get a new project come through in terms of how you break that down for each character?
I suppose I always have a certain method of the way that sort of my brain works and how I need to process the script. And I'll always obviously read the script. I'll highlight anything that's particular in terms of if there's a gag of something in costume, or if something's particularly mentioned about the colour or something of costume, I'll obviously, that would be a key thing to highlight. But then it comes down to sort of the discussion with the director and the sort of overall vision. Because I'm sure, you know, everybody must say this to you, that it is a collaborative, you know, process. I don't just go away and make this wardrobe and, you know, give it to the actors. You talk to the director and find out that overall vision, and, you know, he or she may have an idea of the tones and the colours that they're using for camera and lighting, which will obviously then inform, you know, the fabrics that we use in costume. And obviously I work with, you know, the art director as well in terms of the palette and colour of the set, whether we're going to be contrasting or whether we may well be, you know, complementing with the colours and patterns used. But I very much start with a script, sort of highlight those key things. And then after those discussions about the sort of ideas and themes of the production as a whole, I'll just start like researching like mad, whether it's a period thing or not, you know, just finding those images that sort of jump out at me. And to start with, it won't always necessarily be like items of clothing. It may well be like a piece of wallpaper, a pattern on, you know, a piece of wallpaper, or it could be anything, you know, picture of a bench or anything that's got a sort of texture or idea to it that I feel like, oh, that could be really interesting for that character or that sort of thing. And so I always put together mood boards. I absolutely love a mood board. I'm still a cut and stick girl. I don't do any of these digital, like, I'm like a physical cut and stick. And sometimes the first one's like, doesn't look costumey at all, but it's just ideas of colours. And when you put those things together, there might well be a theme of things that you found for that person, whether it be a colour or just a detail on something. It sort of comes together on a board. And then I always take those to the next meeting, and I'll always have those at fittings as well for the actor to sort of see, to get that kind of the idea of the overall look as well. So that's the sort of, yeah, that's my, they're my first few steps. Yeah.
It's interesting because you're talking about obviously how your mind maybe interprets these things. And I'm picturing obviously a very visual and creative process that you're going through. But I guess I'm just curious as to whether that's an innate thing that some people have and other people just don't have that ability. You know how we all process information and learn differently? Well, it's a very similar thing, I think, in terms of what you're talking about, where you could show me a bunch of patterns and I'd probably be like, yeah, that kind of works and that kind of works. But I don't think I could then just see that on a, you know, A4 piece of paper and have my mind go into a spiral that could then visualize something that doesn't exist yet. And that's really interesting. Do you think that's something that is innate, or could that be learned by people?
I don't know. I feel like I've always been a very like physical person in the sense of like touching fabrics and feeling things, and sort of that the way that my brain works is very visual. But I feel like that is something that I've experimented with and explored further in doing costume, and right back to even my degree and my master's, that maybe I would have started by getting 1,000 images and then trying to find what works. And now maybe I'm just a little bit more sort of restraint on those things because I know the avenues that work, maybe. So
that's experience though, right? Like you've done it enough now that you kind of know yourself and your own style a little bit more to trust the process, which makes sense. I guess then for people that are starting out or want to get started out now, because obviously you're talking about when you did university a while ago, but if they were going to get into it post-lockdown, what kind of advice would you give to someone who would be, again, super keen to explore costume design as a possible career avenue?
I think the love of it is obviously really important. And I think I'm a real film buff as well. Like I love watching movies. I go to the cinema all the time, which I haven't been able to do in lockdown. I'm like bereft of going to the cinema. But I think the first thing is that sort of keenness, because obviously with all aspects of the film and TV industry, like it is all consuming. The job is hard work and it is sort of, so you have to sort of live and breathe it and love what you're doing. But I think to start out with, to sort of explore that is, you know, watching loads of movies and different things, you know, right back to sort of black and whites and, you know, a whole range of different films to see how cost, because obviously in black and white costume is a whole other element because obviously you're not seeing that color, you know, as vibrantly on camera. And just sort of researching, I mean, there's loads of books on it now. There's, you know, there have been V&A exhibitions, the Hollywood exhibition at the V&A was amazing. And just reading up about it, reading about different designers and how they work, because they often have a style, a particular sort of style that they work in. And I mean, the main thing is just getting that taste for it and that experience. And like people always ask me, it's that awful thing of how do you get work experience when they want experience, but you don't have experience? It's that sort of catch 22. But just taking those, you know, opportunities of even sort of, you know, community theatre and like youth theatre and short films is massive. That's why I started designing with short films. Like I love short films. It's super collaborative and really good fun. And you just get your teeth into it. Like it's a great, you know, and I think with short films and smaller budgets, you can really have like really good fun with costume and really use that to your advantage and to learn. So anything like that, and particularly with like being in lockdown, is, you know, to read and research and look into it, you know, watch these movies and look at movies you wouldn't normally consider to be for costume design. One of my favorite movies is Fight Club. And you wouldn't think Fight Club is something that people would go, oh, the costumes are so cool in Fight Club. But they're so cleverly designed. And just to look at it from that point of view as well. And I mean, my costume course at uni was invaluable. Like I loved going to uni to explore that. But I learned so much from experience from actually being in the industry. So I wouldn't say it's necessary to have a degree, but it helped me to explore sort of what I wanted to do and how best to go about it. But getting that experience and just, even if it's just shadowing and just watching, it's really invaluable, you know, to just see it and experience it.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same as anything, right? You kind of can read and learn and do a course till the cows come home, but at some point you gotta kind of put some money in the game and actually do it. Yeah. Otherwise you're just an academic or a conceptualist.
Exactly.
But like, how do you, because now I'm intrigued, how do you actually sort of find and source that work? I know now with the stage you're at, you've got enough under your belt and enough connections that it becomes probably networking and a bit of organic where you, that it happens. Yeah. But when you're maybe starting out, obviously for like actors, we got an agent and they help us out. But are there agents for costume designers, or is it more you go on different websites that you just find the jobs listed? Like how would people find those jobs early on when they don't know anybody?
Yeah, it's a great question, because I remember it's sort of, it is that thing of getting that experience is the key thing. How do you actually do that? I mean, costume designers that are very well established obviously have agents that sift through scripts for them and, you know, but that's obviously at a different sort of level of the game. But in terms of getting that experience, I remember looking on websites and looking at job opportunities, and it's difficult because sometimes that costume word hits up different things like fancy dress shops and, you know, that sort of funny, you know, we're looking for a, you know, novelty cow costume or whatever, you know, so you have to sort of, you have to sift through that stuff. But often on like community websites, and now with like social media is like massive now, like it wasn't, I've never really used social media when I was starting to look for work. But now, you know, short films advertise on Facebook groups all the time, looking okay. for costume designers and looking for someone to help out with wardrobe. I mean, don't always think about it as like necessarily costume design. Some people might be looking for someone to join to do costume and set, or, you know, depending on the budget. But yeah, the Facebook groups are really great for that sort of thing. And just getting the word out there, like having a website's great, having an Instagram and being, you know, out there on social media about being interested in it. And you'll find the connections perhaps that way. That's not something, you know, I'd post on Instagram back when I started, but that's a great avenue to sort of get your name out there that you're interested in it.
Yeah, Instagram makes total sense, doesn't it? Because it's such a visual thing that you're doing. And that's obviously the visual platform that, yeah, you can build a bit of a brand. And, you know, people will kind of, I guess, get to know you indirectly. Sites, I guess, like, did you ever use Mandy and sites like
Mandy,
that?
Yeah. I feel like wasn't Mandy how I found Digital You? I feel like that might have been through that way.
Damn, I know. I don't know what you're talking about. What's that?
Mandy was a great one that I started up because they're often like smaller productions looking for up and coming designers mm-hmm. that want to sort of try their hand at it and get some experience. And that's a great place because it's often the fear as well is that if you're wanting to be a trainee or you're wanting to learn, to then to just take a job as a costume designer might be slightly overwhelming. And I think, you know, it can often not go down the right path if you're wanting to sort of learn. I think looking for those opportunities on sites like Mandy is, yeah, really good.
That's an important distinction, I guess, to make too, right? Because we're talking about costume designers and design, but obviously there are different facets of the costume kind of jobs you can do in industry. So once we're talking about bigger films, bigger shows, and the actual all-encompassing team that overlooks costume, the costume design or designer is one part or one role, but there are different facets. And I'm not going to pretend like I know them well enough to name them and then say what they are. So I'm going to maybe pass that over to you. And I don't know if you could maybe elaborate a little bit on some of the distinctions as to what those different roles are and some of the different ones you've done as you've grown and progressed.
Yeah, definitely. So I actually started, even though I, you know, loved costume design and I wanted to get into the industry, I didn't start out designing costumes. I started out actually on Emmerdale, in the office of Emmerdale.
Don't you say that out loud.
Dave, Emmerdale, proud.
Yeah.
In the offices doing buying for fittings. And then I got my first job on a kids TV show as the trainee. So in terms of the costume department, it's broken up into sort of roles. And there's the costume designer, and they are sort of the leader of the ship in terms of the overall design of and the look of the show. And they'll be the one that has the meetings with the director and will lead the fittings, the cast fittings. Next to that will be the assistant costume designer. This is often on feature films that have the budget and the sort of size of show that require an assistant. And then there'll be the costume supervisor, who is a vital member of the team because they're the person that they're sort of the manager of the department, and they sort the logistics of the running of the truck and the day-to-day running of everything they need and the moves to different sets and the costumes that are required. They do a lot of the logistic managerial work. And to be a costume supervisor, you need to be super organized. I mean, still with that sort of creativeness to help the designer when needed, but it's very much a sort of structured logistic job as the supervisor. Then you have the costume standbys, and they are the people that look after the cast on set. So they'll dress the cast, which is obviously more important for sort of period jobs when you are physically corseting or putting cages on and, you know, needing dressing. And then they will do the continuity of the costumes on set, which is obviously to make sure that the cast member is in the right costume for that scene, and to make sure during that scene nothing moves about that's going to cause a continuity error that's going to make you sort of, you know, jolt and see that move. And then there's the costume trainee, which is their job to often help the supervisor on the truck. They'll do the lineup of the costume, which are all the costumes that are needed for the next day, to prep and make sure everything's ready for the cast member. They'll help the designer with any shopping or buying or returning that needs doing. And they will have a sort of an overall view of the entire production. So they'll be on set sometimes with a crowd if need be. They'll be helping the standby with things. They'll be having a supervisor. So the trainee job is the first run on the ladder, but mm-hmm. it's so valuable to get that sort of traineeship because you are having a view of what everyone's job is and the sort of cogs in the, you know, in the mechanism. So, and often on obviously bigger productions, you'll have, you know, a making room with costume makers and tailors, and, you know, it sort of will grow out exponentially depending on the production, but that's the core team that are on set, during a production, during filming.
Which is cool to hear out loud, because that's a lot more than what I think many people might imagine from the outside looking in, where it's yeah. just, oh, magically the clothes are there. And I don't even think we think about the stupidly simple things like, what happens if someone spills something on the costume at lunch, or like it's a stain and
all the newer thing. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And that must be like, you know, what are some of your bugbears, like some of the biggest kind of, you know, pain in the ass moments with actors when they're wearing costumes or trying them on, where you're like, just please don't do that, or
nothing. They're all marvelous. No one does anything.
You're talking to one. Don't lie.
I don't know about sort of bugbears, but it's like, I suppose there's certain things that do. I always hate when something looks like super pressed and perfect, right. because you don't wear clothes like that, and it's not, you know, it doesn't look real. When you've got that sort of the crease in the sleeve that you've just sort of ironed it like it's flat out of a packet. I love when clothes are broken down and look worn and that sort of thing. But I suppose there's no massive bugbears. I mean, one thing which is for the standby, and I started as a trainee and then went up the run to standby and look after actors on set, is the iPhone. Now, if you're on a period drama and you've got a beautiful pair of breeches on and a frock coat and you've got an iPhone in your back pocket, that's a bit of a bugbear. So we're constantly taking phones off people and that sort of thing. But otherwise, I mean, they're all marvelous, really.
Wow, you're so polite. Send the real answers to me in an email. It's fine.
I'll put them in an email.
No, yeah. I mean, it is that thing. We're so attached to our damn phone that we don't even think about it. And then all of a sudden, unless it's Back to the Future, it doesn't make sense that you're going to have that in the period piece, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Interesting. And then do you have like a favorite costume that you've designed, or like something that you're super proud of in particular? I'm sure they're all your babies, but...
Well, yeah, that's it. It's like everything that you do, it's like, and also everything's your favorite when it's new. Sure. Sort of, even if you do this amazing costume and it's been seen like on so many scenes, and then something new comes in from the workroom, it's suddenly your favorite because it's something new. But I think one of my favorite shows I worked on, I assisted the designer Richard Cook on Harlots, which is a Hulu program set in 1763. And that was just so much fun because... We're adhering to the period piece and everybody is wearing the correct sort of undergarments and everything is period correct in the sense of the silhouette of the costume. But we had so much fun with fabrics and embellishment that, because obviously them being harlots, you could sort of push the barrier a bit with that. And yeah, the colours that we use, I mean, Richard's an amazing designer and I learned a lot from him with sort of colours and fabrics and where you could source fabrics from. You don't just have to get it off the roll. It can actually be a vintage bedsheet or a vintage something that you make into something else. And yeah, we had loads of fun on that show. And Liv Tyler's costumes in that are some of my favourites that I've been involved with. So yeah, she looked gorgeous in hers.
Do you like to sometimes work with the actor if you're able to try and test different things? I know that's not always going to be an option, but like, how collaborative would you like to get ideally when it comes to that sort of stuff?
It's actually massively collaborative, and it's only when something is really specific in the script that you're sort of trying to lead the actor in the way that you know you've discussed with the director that this is a particular thing the director is keen on. But even saying that, sort of the fitting process is so important because you can have an idea of an item of clothing for an actor that you think this is exactly what, you know, this is exactly what they need to be wearing. And then in the fitting, it just doesn't work. And it's just not, particularly when you've had, you know, the casting through, you just think, oh, that's not what I imagine this character to look like. And there'll be certain things that during that fitting, you might start thinking it's one thing. And then at the end of the fitting, you actually find something amazing you would never have considered until you actually have the body there. Mm. And the actors often come with ideas as well. And they want, you know, it's often they'll say, like, it's not until they're in full costume and hair and makeup that they feel like they can start playing around as that character. So it's really important to let them play around as well and sort of find things that they can resonate with as that character. That's really important. You don't want them to feel like they're just a clothes hanger and just sort of modeling things. It needs to be, yeah, that they feel like that's really true to the character that they're portraying. Because that's at the end of the day, we're there to facilitate that the story is being told. So that's really, yeah, really important.
And that's a long process potentially, right? Like, you know, it's not just, okay, show up on the day with a bit of clothing and slap it on somebody and off they go to shoot. No, exactly. But that's, but again, like, I think to break down, I know the time frames of, you know, when you first get the job to then like saying action on set for the first time is going to vary. But
yeah,
if you could loosely give an idea of like, what's that journey or what's that process that you would go through, generally speaking?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it depends on the budget and the length of the shoot and, you know, and how many costumes that person has. But generally, so the sort of timeline of it would be I'd start with the research and the boards that we talked about before. And then I'll start, if there's any makes, if it's a show that needs makes for, it could well be for a particular item of clothing that can't be bought in the store, if it's particularly this period, if it can't be hired from somewhere. But also obviously something that needs to be considered if we need repeats of something, particularly if it's a period show, if there's someone's getting shot or someone, you know, there's a fight or anything like that that needs stunt doubles or a riding double, it needs to be recreated for repeats. So there may well be makes involved, and that obviously lengthens the prep of that costume, because you will need to play around with the shape and the silhouette, and then you'll have a toile made, which sometimes is in the hero fabric and sometimes not, depending on what it is. And you'll have maybe several fittings of that custom piece, because obviously it's made to measure and we need it to be perfect, and it goes to the workroom to get finished. So that often will lengthen the you know, if it's a made costume. But then you'll do fittings with the actors, and sometimes it goes well, sometimes not so well, and you'll have another fitting and then another fitting. It often depends on the actor's process as well, to maybe go away and sort of, you know, think about some of the things we've tried on, and to come back and play around with some more ideas. Because often, you know, if it's a contemporary show, you can't have everything in every color and size, and you know, so you know, you'll go away and re-establish and either hire or buy some more options and fit again. And then after that, you'll the breakdown will often occur, particularly if it's contemporary. You'll, you know, make sure everything's washed, worn really nicely, and if there's anything that needs to be look particularly old or particularly broken down that needs working on, which takes a lot of time. Mm-hmm. And then you'll establish the sort of costume plot, which you'll be thinking about as a designer during the fitting, about what they'll wear when, and what's needed for a particular piece of the production. Mm-hmm. And during that whole time, you'll be thinking of the schedule and when you're filming that thing and, you know, what needs to be done first. So you're constantly thinking about that in the fittings of what you need to prioritize for the shoot. And then it gets to sort of before the shoot, and you prep everything and make sure everything looks as it should. And you'll often do sort of accessories and all that sort of thing to sort of finish off the look. And then it goes onto camera and away it goes, and it's out of your hands.
Yeah, until you're realizing you have someone that has to look at it like a hawk throughout the shot, so that they make sure that it's not...
Yeah, and then the standby looks after it.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Okay, fair enough. Yeah, you pass it on.
Yeah,
someone else to look after it for you.
But the costume designer will almost always establish it on set. So the first time a costume is seen on camera, you'll do camera tests and things beforehand as well, just to make sure everything is looking as we want it to with the different lenses of the camera, which is often done with art department and backdrops and things to make sure everyone's on the same page and it's looking as the director wants it to. But yes, so the first time it's seen on camera, the designer will always go on to set and just set it as it should be. And, you know, which doesn't always mean perfectly, you know, prim and proper. It can be that it actually needs to look disheveled or, you know, a certain way, or like I say, broken down. If we're shooting something post fight and we've not seen the fight yet, you need to know what they're coming out of a fight to look like. So that will be established by the designer, and then the standby will keep it as that for continuity.
Lots of moving parts there, obviously. Yes. And I mean, the designer, I will assume, is given their allocated budget at the very, very beginning. And that's what they have to play with. And it's pretty much on them to source what they want to source from wherever they can. And God forbid they go over budget.
Yes. That's often a discussion. That's something I've learned, you know, reasonably recently when I've started designing my own shows, is that that is a discussion point as well, that it's not, you're not necessarily just told this is it. I mean, you know, there will be an allocated budget that is put to the side of costume, but you will go away and read the script. And if there's anything that they won't potentially have thought about, like I said about repeats, if you need six of a certain costume made, then that is, you know, that's a big cost. Or if you, you know, if there's stunt doubles that will need repeats of costumes and that sort of thing, that will come into, you know, a bracket that you can say, actually, you know, because of these things, this is what we'll need to make it work. But it's always a case of, you know, you always want more money. You always, you know, to do more and more things, better fabric, more fabric, and, you know.
More fabric.
Yeah.
Is that the costume designer's t-shirt that you should all wear? Just one t-shirt that says more fabric.
Yeah, exactly. But that's part of the fun of it. If it was super easy, then it would get kind of boring. If you were just given a blank check, it would be kind of, you know, boring. That's part of the fun of it. That's why I said about short films are such good fun, you know, because you can go to vintage stores and thrift stores and try and find little gems that, you know, are within your budget, but something that you wouldn't have thought about. So
it's kind of like, you're sort of going on a garage sale almost, or kind of really having to hunt for that bargain, but still keep the quality at the right level. And it's,
yeah, exactly.
I don't think this is an answer or a question that has an answer to it, but I guess with the way things are, and we don't know what's going to happen industry-wise and what we're allowed to do and touch and be close to and proximities and all this stuff that's being figured out, I'm not going to ask you what you think is going to happen, because who the fuck knows, but what kind of like concerns or initial kind of things have come up for you during this time, specifically to what you do as a costume designer? Have you had anything where you've kind of looked at the current climate and gone, well, this could be a problem, or I might have to shift to do things differently?
I think everyone will have to sort of change into that, you know, new way of working, because I mean, one of my concerns is that sort of autopilot thing, as we do, you know, you want to just go and, you know, touch something or move a tie, or just, you know, just like I say, that autopilot. But I think something that will have to be thought about and sort of taken in, you know, that sort of respectful way with the time allowed as well is costume fittings, because, you know, and hire houses, if you're trying things on an actor and then it's going back on the rail for somebody else to come and try on, you know, there's that sort of process that, you know, is a consideration as well. And with sort of, with a contemporary show, the sort of shopping and returning of things, because often as costume designers, we'll go and shop and buy, you know, a wealth of items from the high street to try on and then return to store. And I know that stores are having to put things sort of in quarantine before they can go back on the shelves. So I suppose there's that to consider as well. And obviously,
I didn't know things got returned to store. It makes sense, obviously. But so you're saying someone out there somewhere could have bought something that could have been worn by a famous actor in a show.
Yeah,
and they wouldn't even know it.
Wouldn't even know that it touched some famous actor. Yeah, exactly.
Or like some actor they hate, and the irony is. So I was gonna, yeah. So like, obviously, what do they do with all these costumes is obviously a good question. Like, they return a lot of it, but then some things that maybe you've made bespoke, you're not going to return to a store. So what happens to those? Do actors keep them? Do they auction them? I guess it's a big old mix of stuff. Or
yeah, it's a total mix. It depends on the show and it depends on the production company and what their sort of protocol is for that stuff. Often if something's been made in a hire house, it might be made to be kept by the hire house as part of the sort of the deal of that being made there. Or things are put into storage in case of any, obviously things are put into storage anyway in case of any pickups or, you know, reshoots of things. You need to make sure you can still have the same clothes. If an actor has taken a particular fancy to something, which is always a compliment if they want to keep the thing that you've put them in, it's often, you know, it's often allowed, it will be at the discretion of the production. And they often have to say, you know, should it be needed again, they'll bring it back with them. You know, not leave it in LA or something if it's needed for a reshoot. Yeah, so that's kind of at the discretion of the production if the actor wants to keep something. But it's always a compliment if they do. It's very nice if they're seen in something that they wore as a character piece.
Well, I think it's a hallmark, isn't it? Like, you go through that journey, even if it's just a week of shooting or whatever, but you feel that attachment to the project and you're part of that group. And, you know, it's a big old circus, as we all know. And you kind of have that sort of family vibe and you want them to remember it. It's, you know, maybe not always that easy to take a huge prop that'd take up half your living room, but a bit of clothing, you know, is always a nice reminder.
I mean, I'd be the same if you were on a Star Wars and you could keep a lightsaber. Like, of course, you know.
Well, sure. Of course, even if you're not allowed, that, you know, just
a little
bit of theft. It's all right. Just blame it on Oscar Isaac or something. It's all good.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And theaters too, I suppose. Like because they need all the help they can get in the world now. Like donating costumes to them and giving them all that stuff to work with. You mentioned Fight Club earlier, and my brain went, ooh, interesting. And so at the time, my question was going to be, like, what is it about that specific movie that you found so amazing from a costume perspective? Because as you say, it's not the most in-your-face thing, but I'm expecting it to be very much around story and palette and design and tone.
Yeah.
But I'm keen to really get your sort of, I guess, thesis on it.
Yeah. I mean, it's just... I mean, I love the movie anyway. I think it's a brilliant movie, and I love the book. But it's so cleverly done with the Tyler Durden costumes are sort of iconic now. That sort of blood red leather jacket is sort of iconic to Fight Club, which I think I read somewhere was actually dyed to the blood that they were going to use on Brad Pitt, the fake blood. So it's sort of that ominous sort of telling of that blood that's about to come in the Fight Club. But the sort of, you know, the outlandish shirts and everything, it's very much sort of Edward Norton's character is wanting to be this sort of outlandish character. And the sort of fur coats that he wears and things, it's so well done without being, hey, look at this guy who's really cool and you want to be like him, you know. And I just think Helena Bonham Carter's, there's a piece where she's in I think it's a prom dress or a bridesmaid dress that she's found on the side of the road, and she wears it and makes a comment about it. And, you know, it is very nuanced, and it's very sort of, it's not in your face. And that's what I love about it, that it's so cleverly done, because the story is so dominant to that as well, that you just, everything needs to bow down to that sort of dual personality thing, which I think's done really well.
Is that the trick, really, to sort of make it be so good that no one, as you said earlier, no one notices it?
Yeah, right? Exactly. I remember I went to see The Great Gatsby, which is another of Baz Luhrmann's. I'm a big fan of Baz Luhrmann. And I'd gone with a friend who wasn't in business or anything, and I said, oh, what did you think? And she just said, oh, it's gorgeous, so lavish and beautiful and stuff. And I said, oh, what do you think of Leo in that pink suit? You know, and she went, oh, did he wear a pink suit? And part of me was like, yes, how did you not? And then she said, oh, I just thought it was so, everything was just so beautiful. And, you know, and I just thought that's so interesting that I would have picked out something specific, but she just viewed it as a whole beautiful thing and was just encompassed by the look of it, you know? So it's not necessarily that it's a talking point that I will have picked up on, but somebody may not have, you know, but just giving it that story and that overall look, and obviously the costumes and art department together on that show just created this beautiful thing, which my friend commented on without being so specific as to a particular costume, you know.
Well, you don't want it to be jarring, right? Like, you don't want one thing to stand out so much that it's obviously out of place. And I guess you probably pick up on it because, well, it's what you love and it's your profession, right? So I suppose when you watch a film, you're kind of watching it with that mindset on, whether you like it or not, a lot of the time.
Yeah. And it's difficult because when you're a standby as well, I mean, I was a standby for a couple of years, and you start to watch for continuity things because you're so used to watching a monitor to check things that you think that collar is going to go in and out and in and out. And it's funny that now I don't notice those things unless it's a glaring blooper sort of thing. But now I think, God, that's interesting that they've used that fabric. Or, you know, I can't just sit and watch a movie for what it is now. I'm like obsessed with looking at
something. I was going to say, can you even enjoy just the story? No, you're always on.
Always on. Even if it's like, I mean, I love a popcorn movie, like a Mission Impossible and a Fast and Furious and those sorts of things. And that's like a nice turn-off movie that I can just sit back and go, hey, they put Vin Diesel in a tank top. It's like, you know, I don't have to think too much.
Let it go. It's like, let it go, Elsa. It's okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Awesome. Any, you're talking about Baz Luhrmann quite a bit there, but are there any, like, would there be a movie or a show that you look at and go, God, I would have loved to have been involved on that process.
Probably one of my favorite costumed films is Gangs of New York, the Martin Scorsese, which is Sandy Powell, who's an incredible costume designer. And her use of fabrics and colors in that is really interesting because it is a period piece, but the use of the sort of quite bright tartans and things in that's really interesting. I would have loved to have seen that process. And obviously she's worked with Martin Scorsese, you know, a number of times, so they must have a really great shorthand. And I would have loved to have see how that works to, as a designer, to work with somebody that, as a director, you've worked with often, if there is that kind of quick shorthand that they have. Because I know that Daniel Day-Lewis's costume is in that. Was all about elongating him and making him look very tall, which is why his top hat is so tall and thin in that. That would have been a great one to be involved with. Yeah,
there must be shorthand. You develop it with anybody that you work with a lot, no matter what like industry you're in, right? But
yeah, exactly.
It's more because it's Scorsese, and you're like,
You're like, I'd love to have a shorthand with Scorsese. That would be so cool.
Well, you know, eventually, soon enough, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
I
was just going to say, the one genre, because I often, sometimes people will say about, you know, things that I'd like to have worked on, the one genre I don't have is like sci-fi. And I always think that would, for costume, that's sort of, you know, an open book as to, one of my favorite movies is The Fifth Element and Blade Runner and that sort of thing of creating a world.
A world.
And yeah, and just sort of having that real fun that you don't have to have any strict sort of limitations with the period, or it must be this collar, or it must be this sort of particular silhouette, or it's just free reign. And I wonder if that would be daunting or not, whether it's actually to not have the strict, you know, the restrictions of a period, to actually just have complete free reign. I mean, where do you start on something like that? I guess there would
eventually be restrictions, though, because you're creating at the beginning there isn't, but eventually I guess you go so big and then you kind of funnel it in. You know, you're feeding into not just the world with the costume, but obviously the palette of what it's going to look like on camera and what the actual aesthetic of this place is. And as always, like, how does it feed back into the story?
I feel like it still has to be clothing and be believable that people are wearing this as clothing. I mean, if you think Fifth Element on one hand and Blade Runner, they're very different. And the Blade Runner has that sort of very sort of, you know, dystopian place, and it's sort of very broken down, and you know, Deckard's trench coat, and that's obviously really iconic. And but that's still just a coat. I mean, it's a coat which you could probably find in a thrift store. You know, it's not rocket science. You know what I mean? It's sort of, but it's still creating somewhere totally unique. You know,
it's interesting, isn't it? When certain bits of clothing from different films become iconic in of themselves.
Yeah.
What do you think it is that makes that? Like, it's obviously a multiple factors, but is it lightning in a bottle? Is it the performance of the actor, the name of the actor, the whole vibe of the thing? Like, why do they pick up on one item of clothing as well?
Yeah, I know, it's interesting. And something I've found really interesting in the last couple of years, my cousin's really big on Comic-Con, and I went to a Comic-Con with him. He made this huge sort of amazing...
Over here in the UK or in the States?
In the UK, yeah, the London Comic-Con a couple of years ago. And it was so amazing to see the costumes that people pick up on as their sort of something that they'd love to wear. And obviously there was a lot of Marvel, there's a lot of Stormtroopers and that sort of, you know, that element of stuff as well. But it's really interesting, those things that become iconic, I think it's so transferable now, because if it's iconic, someone's going to wear it at Comic-Con, you know? And there was one guy was wearing a Bane costume, and he looked incredible. And he'd got the mask and everything from Batman. And he'd got the coat from Bane, which, it's got a fur collar and it's this huge coat. And it sort of looked, he looked incredible. And I think he just wore black underneath, and it was just this coat and this mask on his face, which just sold it, you know? So yeah, I suppose, I don't know if you'll ever know at the time if it's going to be something that's going to be that lightning in the bottle, if the audience is going to resonate with it and like it. But often I think it's maybe more understated things that people think is cool, and often it's who's wearing it makes it cool as well.
Sure. But it is, yeah, I think it is the more understated things. It is, like you say, the Tyler Durden leather jacket, for example, yeah. Or something as simple as that. You said you don't know if you're going to hit lightning in a bottle, but when you're going through the process, do you start to get that feeling that you kind of know when it's clicking into gear that you're happy with the costume, or do you never fully feel happy with it?
I think it's possibly if you find a piece that you think is amazing, or you've got a make that you're working with, I think I always sort of second guess myself on the choice of fabric or if it's going to work. And it's perhaps not until maybe later on in the fittings, where particularly what's really helpful if they've been in hair and makeup, if they've got a wig or a beard that they're going to be using in the show, is when you use that piece with other things and put it together as a whole outfit. And it could be, a make that's cost a fortune, but actually a shirt you found from a vintage shop that cost you £12, but the shirt is just, it just lifts the make and makes it, comes together as a whole costume. So I think nearing the end, I think, is when you start to think, oh, this is going to work, because it's sort of coming together. And obviously when it's been broken down as well, because when something's been newly made, it always looks so stiff and new and sort of, the actor will stand differently in it because they feel like, oh, this has been made, so I've got to stand proper. And, but when you've really sort of broken it down and make it look nice and worn, that's when it brings it to life, really.
And how do you, going about doing that, obviously you mentioned earlier, it takes a little bit of time. What do you actually do when you try to break down different garments?
Well, it depends what it is and the story of that garment, because obviously if something is supposed to be new, if it's a very stylish person that wears new stuff, obviously you'll always give it a wash and a bit of a steam just to make it look less, because obviously particularly like a white shirt is like the enemy on camera because it's so so bright and a massive white. But yeah, it depends what it is, but we'll always make stuff look natural, because if you think, we wash and wear stuff all the time, and it's going to get certain sort of wear marks, whether it be on the elbow or whether in the pockets, you're going to put stuff in and out of your pockets. I mean, you see now people with their jeans with like the iPhone line. But also it's those things maybe that the actor will come to do, that if I was on a kids' TV show and this one particular kid would pull on his jumper sleeves and would end up putting two holes in the sleeve ends, the cuffs for his thumbs. And I remember just thinking, that's so great. Like, if that's what you would do, that's a brilliant little piece of character that's come through the costume, and it can be as simple as that. But the actual process of breaking something down, like I say, depends on the level of it. But sure. If, something like Mad Max is obviously going to have gone, to the extreme, and it will always be sort of washed. And then there's a process of sort of sanding the fabric, even grating it to sort of bring the fibers out to make it bobbly, when jumpers and things go that sort of bobbly when you've worn them. You'll often spray into them as well, so if it needs to look sun bleached or it needs to look like it's been, in particular type of weather, you'll sun bleach it with sprays. Or if it's, a very famous one is obviously on period dramas with frock coats. If a man's been riding, it needs to have mud splattered up like it's been on the back of a horse. So you'll often break down the hems and make it look like it's been dragged through mud and things. And the key is to make it look like it's been done over time, which is why it can be a slow process, because you're wearing the fabric down over time. So it takes a lot of levels of it, because if you suddenly have a new thing and then just throw mud at it, it's not, it's not as effective. So, but there are people that specialize in breaking down, because it's a real art form, so it's really, really important.
I was going to say, it's like one of those things that you don't really think about it at all when you see the end product. But then obviously so much work and consideration has to go into all those different things and giving it the right time and diligence to make sure it's going to be authentic as well.
Yeah, exactly. And that's one of those things that if it's done right, you won't necessarily notice it. That's a key thing, because unless you're seeing it and something is in something so bright and new, your brain will automatically think, has he just bought that? Like, what's the story behind him wearing a bright new, you know, is it because he's got a date and he's just gone and bought himself a brand new shirt? Or, you know, it may well be a story plot line, but yeah, it should be done beautifully. So on camera, you believe it as this is this person's clothing, you know, that they're wearing this.
Yeah, I think there's so many different facets to the whole thing that now I'm kind of appreciating it more, although I knew there was a lot to it. But it's also the amount of people, I think, that goes into it, because, you know, like we know, any production has so many moving parts, so many cogs, but just for the clothes, it's you know, a lot of work. And I guess it'll be interesting to see what that's going to look like moving forward.
Yeah, with the teams and how we're going to operate with each other. And
I guess that's more the time thing too. If it takes a lot of time anyway, then it's just like you said before, factoring in a whole load of extra time for all these different things to take place, because you've got less hands on deck potentially, or less people to be able to do fittings within a certain time frame. So you need to stretch it out. And
yeah, exactly. And we've not even touched on like crowd costumes. Like, you know, you can have,
will there be crowds?
People's on crowd costumes on a period drama, if there's a dance, or if there's a, you know, how is that going to work with those amount of people and the fittings that need to take place? You know, that's something that we're going to have to work out, how to make that work. And like you say, will there be
CGI?
CGI, yeah, exactly.
Well, that's what they were initially talking about, weren't they? I know a lot of the trades were talking about that initially the plan was to try and keep it to really small groups and crowds, and then just CGI the rest of it to make a bigger crowd scene, which I know they do anyway, but it's not.
Yeah, like crowd replication. Yeah,
exactly. Which isn't quite the same. I mean, especially if they're talking about, you know, only having principal actors and then no supporting actors at all. And then it starts to feel weird, but then maybe that's the new world we're in anyway. Maybe we're not allowed to see more than three people in our lives at any one time.
Yeah, maybe we'll just be so used to that. That's what we need on screen as well. We don't want to be overwhelmed with people on screen, because we'll feel like,
they're going to give each other something. Yeah, don't touch his coat.
Don't touch his coat. Yeah, exactly.
Might have the virus, even though we don't know if that's how things transmit. What's kind of ahead for you then? What's down the pipeline? I know there is that kids show that hopefully will come back that you're going to be working on. Do you look much beyond that? Like, do you look at just your immediate gig, or do you like to try and have irons in the fire for down the line?
I think I don't know, it's tricky, because so often things are sort of relatively short notice in terms of productions coming up, and things that, you know, designers will let me know if I'll be assisting something, or, you know, designers will let me know that things will be in a relatively short period of time. So I try not to look too far beyond the job that I'm doing, particularly because you're so ingrained in that job and you're, you know, you can't really start thinking about other things until nearer the end, when you'll start going, oh, this is set up and this all looks great and I'm so pleased with the product. I wonder what else is out there, you know, and you'll start sort of putting the feelers out and things. But I'm so, like in the world of that one show at the time, and then nearer the end, I'll start to branch out and have a look what else is out there.
That more you putting the feelers out these days, or do you find that people and things are starting to come to you a little bit now that you've got the body of work you've got?
Yeah, I think things are starting to sort of come to me a little bit more in terms of designers that I've worked with in particular. Like, if they, you know, it's always good to let people know when you're available, because often people think, oh, she'll be working, you know, and it's always good to sort of spread the word when you are looking for work, for those people go, oh, guess who's available, you know, we'll get them in. And so I'll sort of spread the word of me being available, and then, you know, people will let me know what's going on and what's coming up. And you know, you sort of chat, that, like you say, it's a family-based thing. You know, you often know lots of crew members that are things starting up, and you'll go, oh great, I'll, you know, give them a ring if they need somebody for buying, or they'll need, you know. So it's always good to sort of keep in touch with people and see what's coming up.
Do you think, well, who knows about traveling in the future, but you've done obviously UK specific, would you ever look to potentially see if there's scope to branch out and get on projects outside of the UK? And are there, I mean, I guess it's the same process, or are there different restrictions and processes to work, say, in Europe on beyond visas or anything?
Yeah, I don't know really. I haven't actually thought about it, because I've been so sort of, you know, engrossed in the work going on in the UK that, I mean, often on a couple of my jobs that I've been on, we have gone abroad to film, but it's obviously a UK-based production that will, you know, we did some filming in Paris and Morocco. So, but to actually have a production company based somewhere else would be really interesting, how, whether they would work the same, whether that's, you know, what the role of costume designer would mean if it were a you know, a production company based somewhere else. That would be interesting.
There you go. Next steps.
Maybe. There's a thought. Yeah.
There's a thought. Cool. Well, look, I like to wrap these things up with, do you remember Inside the Actor's Studio? Did you ever watch it?
Yeah.
So you know the questions that James Lipton would ask at the end?
Yeah.
You see where I'm going with this?
Yep.
All right. No, I'm going to hit you with them, and just whatever comes to mind, whatever your kind of gut reaction is. Don't pull weird faces. It's fine.
Sorry.
First question is, what is your favorite word?
Blancmange.
What is your least favorite word?
Overdue.
Okay. No more needed. What turns you on in a creative, spiritual, intellectual kind of way?
I think I'm going to have to be quite nerdy and say collaboration. I love being around creative people and just bouncing ideas off each other. And yeah, I could talk about it, but it doesn't even have to be costume related, films or, you know, I just love being around that community of people. So collaboration, I would say.
Yeah, I don't think that's nerdy. I think that's just having a passion for what you do. How dare you? How
Sorry.
Dare you?
Not nerdy. Proud.
How dare you have passion, to be fair? Could you just not get an office job and just be quiet and not make a noise?
Just do the 9 to 5. Yeah.
Just do the 9 to 5. Get on the tube every day and just shut up and be grateful. What turns you off on the converse of that?
That's a tricky one.
There's that many things.
Probably like closed-mindedness on ideas. I think so. Probably just the opposite of what I was saying. Like if someone's like, no, it has to be this. Why? You know, I think probably, yeah, the opposite of what I just said. Probably just limited and closed-minded ideas, I would say.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Next question's optional, because for some people it's not on brand, but it's, what's your favorite swear word? Go on.
Bollocks.
Okay. It's very British.
And you have to say it real. Oh, bollocks.
I can't say it. I mean, I can say it, but it just doesn't sound right if I say it.
That is good. I think with a little twang of sort of British posh, it works really well.
Yeah, but if it's some American going bollocks, it's like, it just sounds like it just sounds like they have Tourette's or something.
Yeah. And I think it probably comes like from my mum, if she like dropped a trifle or something, that would be something she'd say. And I think that's why I always think it's so funny, because my mum would just, you know, my mum's not a sweary person at all. So it would always be something terrible, like dropping a trifle. Can you imagine?
I like that it's dropping a trifle of all things. Not breaking like the porcelain, like glass or the chinaware or like something, you know, it's the trifle is...
I mean, that makes it even more British of a swear
word.
That
does.
Drop the rifle.
Yeah, it's the end of worlds, definitely. Yeah. Next question is, what's your favorite sound or noise? And if it's the sound of a trifle hitting the ground, your mom's not going to be happy.
Yeah, that's... Oh, imagine that noise, though. That would be pretty good. Favorite sound or noise?
You live with a boom operator, so choose carefully.
I know, I feel like it needs to be something really cool. Actually, because we scuba dive, the bubbles of scuba diving.
Oh, Where do you, you scuba, where are you, like a lot? You scuba dive in?
I don't scuba dive in the UK.
I was going to say.
No, my other half does, but no, I like to go somewhere where there's nice fish and warm water.
You crazy person.
Yeah, funnels.
Okay. What sound or noise do you hate?
Do you know, I really don't like when you, you know, when you buy something that come, like it's often like a microwave or kitchen equipment or something, and it's in with polystyrene and you lift the polystyrene out. That noise is really, that's like, you know, nails chalkboard thing for me. That polystyrene squeaky, that's the worst.
Yeah, I know exactly. What job or profession other than your own would you most like to attempt?
I've always had a fondness for teaching, so probably a teacher, I would think. That's something I could imagine me doing if it wasn't. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'd be teaching costume.
Okay.
No. But yeah, probably teaching. I think it's a real. That would be a great thing to do if I wasn't doing this.
What job would you never, under any circumstance, want to do?
Do you know? I really, given what I've just said about scuba diving. I don't eat fish and I can't stand the smell of fish and cooked fish. So like a fishmonger would be like my worst job.
You don't stand any fish?
No fish or shellfish. No.
Are you allergic or you just don't like it?
It's not that I'm allergic. I never had a real fondness for it. And I haven't eaten it in probably 20 years or something. But then since I started scuba diving and you see them for what they're supposed to be doing, I just can't now. I just couldn't now start eating fish, so I just don't do it.
Fair enough.
But yeah, fishmonger. So it turns my stomach. We did a shoot actually on a job I did last year, and we were filming in the height of summer in the docks in the fish with fishmongers, and that was just something else. The smell. Yeah. I would have been happy for a face mask then.
Yeah, it can be. I remember when I was in Mexico years ago, we went down to sort of some little village town, and they had the open markets. And it was, I think, July or August in peak heat. And the fish were not really even on the stall. Like some of it's like just on the floor, like on the tiled floor. The ice is melted. You see the flies circling. And you don't even have to go into the shopping market to smell it because the whole whiff has just kind of encompassed the entire town. And you're like, why would you buy that?
What? Yeah.
You're going to get all kinds of crazy shit just by even looking at it, let alone eating it. Final question. It's a little bit more ethereal, and it's when it's all said and done, what would you like the story of your life to be? What impact would you like to have?
Like from a career point of view or just sort of?
Just generally. Whatever, like, you know, as a human, forget the fact that you're the person who has costume designer as a label. Yeah.
Okay. What would I like to be remembered for, did you say? Sorry.
Yeah, like what kind of legacy would you like to leave behind?
I think being a nice person.
And too late for that, Ailsa. Come on now. Okay. Don't
ruin that already. Bollocks. dropping my trifle smash.
God damn it.
I think, I know that sounds super cheesy, but just like, you know, working in the industry, because of the time and, you know, the hours that we work and stuff, you really do, you know, take for granted your family and friends, because so many things, you know, birthdays and celebrations and stuff will fall on Saturdays, or if you're, you know, you're working that Saturday or you're doing night shoots or something. And so it makes you realize how important they are. So I suppose just being... yeah, a nice person, a good friend, a good daughter, a good partner, a good, you know, just people saying, oh, she was nice, wouldn't she? That'd be good.
Well, it's the things that matter. I think it's the simple things are the most important things. And yeah, I think, exactly. You know, if anything, through this period, we've probably hopefully appreciated that more than ever, because you realize, how fleeting things are.
Yeah, exactly. And it's that time where I've been doing some creative stuff and stuff for myself, but it's also so brilliant because I've been able to sort of do the Zoom calls and quizzes and things with my friends, and on evenings on a normal time, 6 o'clock evening, like, you know, be able to sort of do those things, which, you know, you do maybe take for granted when you're filming and you're in that film bubble and nothing matters other than, do they have the right socks on, you know? So it's nice to sort of, yeah, see the bigger picture and take those things and enjoy them for as much as you can.
Exactly. Absolutely. And then, you know, whenever we go back, have a little bit of a balance between the two, ideally.
Yeah, I think definitely. If that's something we can take from this, then that will be good, wouldn't it? Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, cool. Look, last, I guess, few moments for you really to just, I guess, give any kind of closing message on, I think, a takeaway for anybody who might watch or listen, who might want to get into costume, any kind of key thoughts that you might want to share as a soundbite. And then anywhere people might be able to find you or find your work, you know, anything on the socials or your website, just plug away.
Yeah. Great. Well, I think costume design is a brilliant course to go into if you're interested in costume. And I think, if you've got a passion for it, keep working hard, keep trying to get that experience, keep plugging on at your CV and meet as many people as you can. Be nice to everybody on set. You never know who you're talking to. That's an important piece of advice. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just learn as much as you can. Never stop learning. Assisting people, you know, training. Just be a sponge and absorb as much information as you can. And, you know, be excited about it. Be excited about working in the industry and never let those night shoots and those long hours sort of bum you out. It's to keep excited and keep, you know, loving what you do. That's really important. And if anyone wants to see some of my work, I've got a website, which is elsawindsor.co.uk, which is AILSA, which I have to spell out, not like the frozen Elsa, which I have to sort of say now. And yeah, there's some of my stuff on there. My CV's on there if anyone's got any sort of questions about things I've worked on, and you can contact me through the website. It's probably best. Yeah.
Awesome. Thanks so much. It's been, as I said, halfway through, I guess, enlightening in some ways to kind of go a little bit deeper into the world and kind of pull on some of those threads, pun intended.
Untaken.
Yeah. Thank you. Just to actually, no, but fully appreciate a bit more about how it all comes together in the process. And look at such a big part of what does make up any film project and really value that without it, it would just be a glaring hole in what we do, like any part of the film process. Yeah, but it's one that's one that's not given much credence unless maybe you see an award show where you see the odd award that goes to a costume designer, but you don't know what goes behind it. You just think, pretty.
Yeah, lovely. Love that costume. Love that clothing. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Well,
it's been really great. It's fun for me to sort of, it's funny, you know, those things I take for granted about even just the team is that not many people do know. When I was at uni, if you said to me that you're a costume standby, I wouldn't have known what that meant, you know. So it's just been really fun to sort of talk about it as a bigger thing. Thanks for having me on. It's been really good fun.
My pleasure. Thank you for sharing and for, you know, putting that knowledge out there. And if anybody does watch it and take something from it and gets a career out of it, then mega bonus.
Yeah. And, you know, if anyone has any questions or anything, like I say, get on my website and, you know, I'm all for supporting new talent. And, you know, I wasn't, you know, long there of being a trainee and getting work experience. So, you know, I try on lots of my jobs to get people in and, you know, interested in costumes. So yeah, email me on my website if you're interested in finding out any more.
That's massive. Yeah, do it, people. If you want a good costume designer to work with, hit up Elsa, because she'll give you a hard time because she'll work you to the bone. But I mean, you know, that's how you're going to learn.